So killed, they're leaving it very open. Windbar, well, what a kick! It's a goal!
Look at him go, Mr. Magic has kicked the most unbelievable goal you have ever seen in a month of Sundays.
Hello, 90s footy fans. Welcome to another week of the 90s Club Footy Podcast. This week, we talk with former Fitzroy, Sydney and Adelaide utility, Peter Cavan. Peter began his AFL career in 1991 with Fitzroy, playing 39 games before moving to the Sydney Swans. He was at the Swans for two seasons, wearing the red and white 18 times, before landing at the Adelaide Crows. Peter was part of the 1997 and 1998 premiership teams with the Crows. In this chat, Peter talks about his time at Fitzroy, the infamous incident with Plugger Lockett at the SCG, landing him some significant facial injuries, moving to the Crows, the premiership wins, and playing on the great Wayne Carey. I hope you enjoy my chat with the latest member of the 90s Club Footy Podcast, Peter Cavan. Peter Cavan, thank you for joining me on the 90s Club Footy Podcast. Looking forward to having a chat with you, mate, and thanks for sharing your time.
No worries. Look forward to it.
Before we even get into all the footy chat, what Peter Cavan up to these days, I guess, you still got that footy involvement and I guess from a work perspective as well.
Yeah, I'm in construction really, I suppose. I've always, sales marketing, but in the construction field. So, I've stayed in Adelaide and got married I've got three young kids, well, not that young anymore, but I've got three kids. One's actually moved back to Melbourne. Just in construction, and I still dabble a little bit in assistant coach with Matty Clark down at the AFLW Crows Girls.
Mate, do you enjoy the coaching side of it with the AFLW? Because that's sort of gone from, something very small now to an 18-team comp and firing.
It's been... when I finished footy, I doubled at some 16s and some 18s coaching, and then went and coached my own side in the amateurs, and that was all boys. And I've got three girls myself. I did a little bit of coaching with netball and stuff like that. But when Beck asked me to get involved about 6 years ago now, there's the second season, and me and Andy McLeod put our hands up and joined in to be assistant coaches, and just found a different environment. It was just really rewarding, and it was just completely different than what I've been involved with before with the boys. It's a lot of fun, but also just to see them just progressing and getting better all the time. And I know they're just a little bit easier to coach, not easier to coach, but it just seems like they just sort of thirst to learn, the girls, where the boys probably feel like they know a bit more.
Hey, let's kick off where your journey started. Started with Fitzroy. A lot of people probably don't realise it. You kicked off with Fitzroy. Were you drafted to the Lions or were you zoned? Because I know you were a Victorian originally. So did you have to sort of go to Lions because of where you were living or where you were drafted?
Yeah. No, it was really to do the postcode back then. You were zoned. I was Fitzroy zoned. Across the road was actually Collingwood zoned. So it was just split by a street. But I was a Carlton supporter growing up. My old man was a Carlton supporter, so I was a big Carlton supporter. But I got involved early. Fitzroy got involved in the 15s and 17s program. Came through that development pathway. We used to 15s and 17s only used to play a few times. But then I played a couple of years in the under-19s. And Robert Shaw was my coach in the under-19s. And I was lucky enough my last year that me, Steve Paxton and Mark Bunn got put on the senior list when the senior list was 52. And, it sort of kicked off from there. I was very fortunate.
No doubt a few hard years, on and off the field with Fitzroy. They obviously had their financial problems and so forth and probably weren't winning a lot of games at that stage. What was it like for you? What was your sort of memories of the early years at the club?
Oh, fantastic, actually. And it was, financially wasn't very strong at all. They didn't have a big supporter base and they were rattling the cans and, almost merged there for a moment with the Bulldogs. And there was always financial strain. And don't forget, it was a part-time job for me back then. We used to train three nights a week down at Lakeside Oval. I worked out at Berwick, used to be sort of like a 100K, 120K trip round sort of trip for the day. But yours, you know, no one was fully professional at that time. But Fitzroy had a I thought of, I learned a lot of life skills there. A good great bunch of blokes that you know, taught me a lot. You know, the Paul Ruses, Alistair Lynch's, these sort of guys, Gary Pert. I was training with these guys every day, and they just taught me a lot about life and how to prepare for training, and then how to, you know, how to play in the game. So that, I mean, it was a great bond. You know, we didn't have any really flash facilities or anything like that, and you know, we always the poor sister, and we used to play at Princess Park, and Cart would take all the receipts, and you know, I was just always up against things. So, but I really enjoyed. It was a very it was a great mentality of us versus them, really.
Caven, oh, look at that kick. Oh. Look at the kick to the centre of the ground. Magnificent kick. Now, which way will it bounce?
You then went to Sydney, Cavo. Did you have an inkling things were looking a little bit grim? And did that sort of made you decide that you wanted to go elsewhere, or how did that Sydney pathway be created?
Yeah, I'd had a couple of good years at Fitzroy. I'd only played about 39 games or 40 games, but I came second best and fair or third best and fairest with Alistair Lynch. You know, I think it was in 92. And 93, I didn't have a great year, but I was still in contract. So the club was doing negotiations, and I put my line in the sand. I said to the club, I used to just manage myself. I said to the club, right, they offered me $7,500, and I said, well, I want $10,000. So we're haggling over $2,500. And they said, nah, we're not going to give you 10 grand. So I said, I was pretty stubborn. I said, okay. And Sydney were going that bad. They'd lost 20-odd games in a row. The AFL gave them some concessions. They got two uncontracted players they could poach. And anyway, so Sydney approached me and said, mate, would you want to come up here and we'll give you 30 grand? So I was like, well, and I think Dermot Brereton was the other guy that came up at the time. Little did I know it was going to cost me another, you know, 40% to live up there. But, you know, it was really over financial, you know, when you look at it. But it's chicken feed nowadays. But that's how it was.
What were the early days like at the Swans? Obviously, I guess, you know, probably wins, losses and so forth, very similar to Fitzroy at that stage, you know, weren't winning a lot of games. You know, how did you adjust to a new program? Obviously, Sydney a little bit different, and probably a non-Victorian sort of side as well, where you know the media and the football just wasn't as popular up there at that stage.
Yeah, that's for sure. It was a good lifestyle choice for me to go there because I was only 23, and I thought I knew everything. I was strutting around a bit, and but to go there and just realise that footy wasn't the be-all, end-all, everything, you know, to put life in perspective a bit more. My girlfriend at the time didn't want to come up, but she ultimately came up a couple of months after. So it was a little bit hard. I was boarding with Mick Werner. We were sharing. I didn't know anyone. And but it was a little bit different. You know, you realise when you moved, that was the first time I moved out of home. I didn't really own anything either. So it was like it was a bit of an adventure, but it didn't last that long. I ran into Tony Lockett about early in the season, and that sort of set me back probably for the rest of the year. But I think I might have only played 8 games for that year.
Well, that's a nice little segue, Cavo, because that was going to be my next question, mate. I guess, yeah, you stay in the Harbour City. It was pretty short, 2 years and 18 games. And obviously one of the most famous incidents coming from the 90s was that elbow that Tony Plugger Lockett gave you, and you suffered some pretty serious facial injuries. How do you reflect on that moment now, and what can you sort of recollect, you know, as it occurred?
Yeah, I remember the day. I mean, I was actually remember the week before, and Ron Barassi was the coach at the time, and I think we got beat by, it might have been Carlton, but now, I mean, Brisbane. But anyway, I remember him give me a bit of a, and this is when you used to be able to give guys a spray. You know, you can't do that anymore. There's a little bit different building relationships I talk about now, but one of Ron's weapons, I suppose, when he was coaching, or one of his tools was to, you know, berate you in front of others and to try to get you up, I suppose. And I remember he gave me a bit of a touch up about maybe my efforts in some of the contests, you know, during the week and last the week before. And I was pretty determined to show him that, you know, that I, you know, could be a strong player at the ball. Anyway, and it just happened to be, you know, I ran back in the flight of ball and I ran into the plugger's elbow, unfortunately. Lucky, it was probably lucky it actually hit me across the bridge of the nose. Could have done some other damage somewhere else, but I end up with a compound fracture. From the day, I just remember going to hospital and listening to the listening to the game. And I'd go to the nurse. I couldn't quite hear it at times, but and I was just asking for a score checkup. I remember one stage, I think we were up by 11 goals, and then, or it might have been, I'm not quite sure, up by a fair bit. And Pluggers come back and we've lost by a couple of points and he's kicked 11 goals and it was like, oh, bloody hell. It's a nightmare this day. But it was pretty, end up being a bit of a circus, tribunal-wise. He ended up getting 8 weeks. You know, I remember going on that Andrew Denton show on the Monday after or something and Denton live and Andrew had got me to, they'd set up this effigy with Tony Lockett on a chair, and he goes, "I choose your weapon." And there was a cricket bat and a baseball bat, and I've chosen the baseball bat, and I've whacked his head off, and his head's, you know, the effigy of the head's gone flying back into a net, and everyone's had a bit of a laugh. And the next day, I've got this "please explain" from Ross Oakley, that he was the chairman of the AFL at the time, and they threatened to deregister me for bringing the game into disrepute. Anyway, I came back I've missed 12 weeks, and our second game back, I think we played Waverley against St Kilda. And I remember him, I was playing back pocket and he was obviously playing full forward. And I remember him blowing me kisses when I was kicking the ball out from full back. You know, sometimes I wish I had a baseball back then too, but that was just, then it was a bit of a circus because then we couldn't beat him. So they recruited him the next year and he came up and we were teammates the next year.
Well, McCrae goes over the top of him, Dean Gregg. Kicks from a standing start inside. Oh, oh, Lockett.
Courage shown. Is it Peter Caven who went for that mark?
He went for the mark before as well, Pete.
Oh, courage, Caven. 50 metres and a stretcher job, I'd suggest.
He had no chance, did he? He showed a lot of guts to get in for that mark.
Well, the question also has to be asked, Pete, if there's 50 metres been given.
Is it a high tackle?
Well, that's exactly right. That's what I'm saying. So, and you certainly don't need to implicate people. However, if the umpire gives a 50,
he must have saw it as a high tackle.
Correct.
When you looked at the vision, you know, after the incident occurred, did you sort of cringe, you know, when you watched it again? Because, you know, he was coming around pretty hard. And when you think about it, you know, you were going back with a fly to the footy and he hit you bloody hard.
I don't cringe when other people see it. You know, it's... It was just a natural instinct to do it, and you know, I can't remember too much after that, really. So, it was just one of those ones where I actually think I marked the ball, but no one sort of recognised that. It was just a natural instinct to go put your head, you know, keep your eyes on the ball and go back for the mark.
You said the next year that obviously Plugger came over to the Sydney Swans, obviously coming up from St Kilda. Yeah. What was the first conversation like that you guys had when you knew that you're going to be teammates? Was it awkward? Was there any sort of apology, or is it just sort of, you know, it wasn't even touched on?
Oh, there was a bit of a circus. The club rolled us out and there was plenty of press there. And, yeah, we shook hands and I can't remember exactly what we said, but Tony was a different... We were never going to be mates. Tony was a different character. You know, he kept himself a fair bit. And, it was just one of those things that he had a bit of white line fever. You know, he was an amazing player, but he trained like he played too. So, you know, no one really wanted to do one-on-one with him. But we usually shuffle Dunkley to him and Dunks could probably take him most times.
Hey,
but
mate,
yeah, he was a pretty quiet guy. He had a couple of close mates, and he left most of his actions on the field doing his goal kicking, you know.
Hey, mate, you at the end of 1995, you left Sydney for the Adelaide Crows. And what I've read, you know, over the last couple of days, you know, preparing for our chat, you know, the discussion behind the decision was a pretty tough one. Can you sort of elaborate on that?
Yeah, Ron, I had a 3-year deal. I'd done 2 years at Sydney. and I don't think they'd really done their homework, Sydney, that well. But Rob Snowden was the footy manager, and Ron Barassi had left, and I hadn't met the new coach. And when the new coach came in, it obviously made a decision on me already. And they'd called me in the office and said, "Peter, we're going to let you go. We're pretty much going to sack you." And I said, "Ah, shit, okay." I was pretty disappointed. I'd only had 1 year coming back after the injury, and I hadn't really played that well, understood, but I still had 1 year in my contract, which was watertight. And I said, "Well, I'll just pay me out and I'll get out of here." And they didn't think they realised I still had a year to go on my contract. And they went, "Oh, okay." So then they sort of scurried around and tried to find some type of trade. And funny enough, that Robert Shaw, who was my coach at Fitzroy a couple of years before that, had got the job at Adelaide, and he rang and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well," and he probably obviously heard I'd been sacked and I was on the market. And I'd actually went home that night and my girlfriend ended up moving up, who was now my wife, Nicole. And I said, "Well, I've got the sack. I grabbed a carton of beer," and I said, "Well, we might as well go backpacking, around the world." But 2 days later, I'd actually had to have a hernia operation at the end of that year. So I couldn't go down to Adelaide until I'd had the hernia operation. But I went down there and they said, "You know, we'll sign you up." So yeah. I turned up first week of training at the Crows and with double hernia operation, not there to do anything.
So how did
so
you
So my body wasn't my body wasn't, you know, 100% when I was in Sydney either. So I'd had the nose the year before, then the hernia, double hernia. So it was a great life experience, but it wasn't great for my football.
Was it sort of a blessing in disguise that you got an opportunity elsewhere and maybe away from Sydney where, you know, you probably haven't had all the luck?
Oh, for sure. I mean, plus it was my last chance. So, you know, I'd realised that I'd had to do everything, you know, to get my body right. And certainly my confidence wasn't particularly high at that time either. And, you know, even looking at – but it was even – before. I remember the local radio station rang me from Adelaide when I was still in Sydney, and they were talking me up like a, you know, number one draft choice. I was going, "Oh, settle down." You know, but it was back into Woody Town. It was a one-team town still then. So Adelaide, it was all about the Adelaide Crows, and I looked at their list and thought, bloody hell, how am I going to get a game in the, you know, that was chockers full of talent, and I was just thinking, where the hell am I going to, where am I going to play in this list? But I was lucky enough to get an opportunity. Sure, he gave me actual opportunity up forward for most of the year. I played about 19-20 games out of the year and played up in the half forward flank, and that was 1996, and it sort of started well that season, and I actually moved in with Ben Hart before my girlfriend came down, and lived with Benny for 6 months until we moved out, got our own unit. But it was great, you know, going back to a footy state, and started then getting, you know, a bit more than semi-professional, was becoming almost fully professional. So I was sort of making those, you know, I was 26, turning 20, you know, was going to be soon 27 soon. You know, it was all sort of getting that stage where I was maturing as a person, but I had to make a decision when I was doing footy or work outside.
Must have been nice to finally get a bit of continuity in your footy as well, obviously after the couple of interrupted years at the Swans. And as you said, you played a fair few games in that first season in 96 and sort of steamrolled nicely after that.
Yeah, the team was travelling well early. I think we got out and won 4 or 5 games early, and, you know, you don't need to do much in Adelaide for them to talk you up. And towards the end, we fell in a heap, and the last – couldn't make the finals. I think we only ended up winning 6 or 7 games of the year, and finished in the bottom half, and then Shorey got the sack, you know, almost the last game of the year. So it was a little bit it was a disappointing year I was lucky enough, I still had a year to go on my contract, and Blighty came in late in that year, October. I think we started actually pre-season before the grand final started. That's how keen we were to get going again.
When Blighty came on, what was your feelings? Obviously, you know, very hard taskmaster, and, you know, with the former Crows teammates that I've spoken with you on this podcast, they said he's, you know, just very meticulous in a lot of his preparation and stuff. So, and what was your first thoughts when Blighty came on board?
I remember the first impression, he pulled everyone together in a big meeting, the whole club, players, you know, trainers, board members, and he just had he pretty much went through, I don't know how long it went for, it was a 3-hour PowerPoint presentation really about how how we're going to play footy, how we're going to kick the ball, how we're going to mark, how we're going to handball. And he certainly let everyone know who was in charge and what his rules were. And he'd obviously cut the heads off, sacked, you know, a fair few senior guys. And you knew that, you know, you're going to be in for an exciting ride, because he talked about the way that he wanted us to play, and what his plan was and his strategies. And it was a really refreshing sort of way. I thought he was a great teacher, probably the best teacher I've really had. I talked about himself a lot, but he actually taught you a lot about the game.
And then obviously the success come after that, mate. The 97 and 98 seasons were unbelievable. Back-to-back flags. And you know, what do you think was, you know, one or two things that really sort of, I guess, was the catalyst behind the improvement from what you achieved in 96 to sort of dominate the competition for the next 2 years?
I think certainly the way Blighty went about and his strategy for football, but also teaching us what he wanted to do. And what he did, he gave lots of guys opportunity. So, he sacked those senior players. So the next tier had to come up, and we found, you know, four or five really young, good young kids, you know, all went on to play 300 games. McLeod, Edwards, Benny was already there. He's all Australian his first year. He was already elite. Goodwin, these sort of young kids, you know, only played a few games. Johnson, Vardy. You know, he made the game fun. You know, he used to go into a game and you play Geelong or something like that, and pre-game he'd just be going, "Oh, how exciting! It's going to be a shootout." You know, they'll kick 20, we'll kick 21, and then we were thinking, "Shit, we're going to kick 20 goals. That's 5 a quarter. We better get going." You know, so you knew, there's no defensive, and he hated flooding, and he just goes, "Beat them 1-on-1, and let's just kick more goals than them." You know, and he used to talk about your strengths. You'd go for your marks. If you kick barrels, you can do that. Doesn't work, put it away. He made it really simple, but he made it really fun.
And the success come. Now, we could talk about the 97 grand final, the first one, but I'm more interested in the 98 one, mate, because, I watched that the other night as a bit of a replay, and, you had the tough job on Wayne Carey, mate. No harder forward to play on in the competition at that stage. You guys got the job done. You kept him to one goal. You know, was that one of your greatest defensive performances in your career?
Yeah, I'm not surprised about that one goal. I asked Nigel to pick him up for 10 seconds up on the half-forward flank. I went to pick up Nigel's man, and there was a ball in, and he got away from Nigel and kicked one out of his ass off the ground. I was pretty pumped for that game, because it wasn't so much a physical preparation. I was ready to go. It was a mental thing, you know. Everyone had watched Wayne Carey on Friday nights all through the 90s win games for the North in 5 minutes, and just the powerhouse he was. I mean, he doesn't get the nickname the King for anything. So for me, it was all mental preparation, really. I played him a couple of times that season. He probably got, you know, 6 Brownlow votes on me. But and Blighty also knew that too, in regards to, he told me early in the week I was going to play on him, and he said, "Look, go and watch some videos, watch how you've played and look at your strengths." And he said, "Look, Peter, he's bigger than you, he's stronger than you, he's faster than you." You know, it wasn't really doing me much confidence much. But he said, you know, really what we want you to do, I'd spent 2 years playing in front of my opponents for, you know, our strategy was, he goes, "I want you to play him from behind and just punch the ball away, contest, punch the ball away and then run him up the ground." So that was basically the principle of the day, was to bring it to ground, off we go, and make him chase me all day. And by three-quarter time, he was pretty shagged. And our boys got on top, particularly in the centre and after half-time. So they'd had their chances. I think they'd kicked 15 points or something before that half-time. And he kicked one goal four or something. I think finished one goal five. So the pressure might have got to him a little bit. I could tell there was a little bit of not so much to me, but to other players, a bit of angst. And the runner came out a couple of times, and there was a bit of angst. He wasn't going his way towards the end, particularly after half time, three quarter time. So I sort of knew that, you know, we were getting on top, and we kicked straight after half time, and they didn't.
McKernan's little give is good to Stevens. Stevens runs and kicks. Can Caven get it again? What a game he's playing. He's away, and Hart's running for him, and Caven's kicking it. Danger. Hart's got to get there. He does. He hasn't put a foot wrong all day.
Perfect kick. Kerry fell over just before the contest. Caven just outbiting him on that occasion.
He does look tired, Kerry, doesn't he? Caven is just running much stronger than the North captain.
I'll tell you what, looking at both grand finals, 97-98, you guys ran out the games really well, and I think it was your second halves that really probably propelled you guys to the dais at the end of the day. You know, what was it about you? Were you a fit side back then? Was it the work that you put in during the preseason that helped you get through to, you know, to run out games so well?
I think it was certainly the sports science had just sort of started. You know, the guys that come in now wouldn't even bloody operate without a sports scientist telling them what to do. But Neil Craig came in with Blighty early on in 97 and said, you know, he's talking to all these words, KPIs and repeatability and all this is like, bloody hell, you know. He made that sports science really a big part of footy for us, you know. So we never, like pre-season, we very rarely touched the footies. We used to just bloody run and run and run and run until we made this, and you know, the sports science boys had told us where we needed to be. And it was all about repeatability and we knew that we were fit enough. So, yeah, and that was Blighty's mission. Maybe at halftime he said, you know, you guys are fit enough. You're going to run over those. They've left the door ajar. Now it's your turn. So he made us feel like we could do it too.
Hey, Peter, at the end of my podcast, I always give my guests a few quick handballs. So I'm going to give you a few quick handballs just to finish off, mate. Loved sure. You know, chatting and listening to your footy journey. So I'm going to give you a few names, mostly from your Adelaide days, and I'd love it if you could share a word or a short phrase just to describe that sure. type of person they were. So chucking you in the deep end, mate. So the first one I'm going to throw you is Andrew McLeod.
Yeah, early on, like I thought he was going to be a great rapper because he wanted to be, you know, he wanted to be some type of rapper as a young kid. He had all the kid on, but ended up, you know, being a superstar and just one of the nicest guys you'll meet. Very deep thinker, but just an outstanding competitor and, you know, gun footballer and great bloke.
Darren Jarman.
Well, Darren was he's elite skill, but also had the other side of him, hated training and particularly hated running. Just give me the balls. He'd run with a ball in his hand, but very good gardener and does like his mid-strength beers.
What about Shane Allen? What a performance in the 97 grand final.
Yeah, Moose Allen we call him because he brought some hair moose to training one day. Before it became trendy. He had the biggest arms. He's the nicest guy too. He had the bloody biggest arms. You're going around, old Shano. You know, he had only kicked two goals maybe in his career, and he kicked five that day and three of them from the halfback flank. So outstanding.
Two players I'm going to ask you from the Sydney Swan days, the first one being Mark Bayes.
Bayesy. You know, he was in the Left Footers Club. Nicest guy you ever met. I mean, had these fake front teeth. He had no front teeth. He just used to run around with. He was funny to look at when he was a trainer because he never used to get mouth guard. He didn't have five front teeth, top front teeth. So, but one of the nicest guys going around and taught me a lot about life, I suppose.
And the last one I'm going to ask you too is Paul Kelly. What a superstar he was.
Yeah, my first year, and he won the Brownlow when my first year up there. It was. Quiet. He was one of the quietest captains you'd ever meet. You know, he never really raised his voice, but just led by example. I've never seen a guy. He was one of the first professional guys. You know, had sort of been around, and he just wanted to win, and he had this thirst to win. He's a super guy, but you know, I've never seen a guy run so fast with his hands on the ground. You know, he just always was bloody was clean and. He was a great captain and led by example.
Now, we spoke about Carey in the grand final in 98. Was he one of the hardest opponents you played on, or was there someone else that you always had a good battle with?
Oh, yeah, he was hard. But in the 90s, I mean, there was always bloody big forwards. You know, so you had Carey, Lockett. I played on Ablett down at Geelong one day. Bloody Longmire was good. Sumich was good, big left footers. Even bloody Nick Holland used to give me trouble at Hawthorn. Dunstall, mate, there was a plethora of them. This is before people started flooding too, you know, it used to be just one-on-one. Waverley, you're out at Waverley playing on Dunstall, and then here comes Jarman and Collins and Buchanan coming out of the midfield. It's like, bloody hell. There was always good battles, but Plugger was always, you know, a challenge. And there was Kernahan was actually I enjoyed playing on Kernahan, and you know, it's just sometimes those people you play on at times and moments. You know, I remember playing on him in front of 30,000 at Prinny Park, and you know, I used to be a Carlton supporter, and all the other bloody Carlton supporters are yelling at me, "Oh, you're a dud, Caven. Kernahan's going to kill you, Caven." You know, those are some of those things you remember, or playing on even, you know, Sav Rocker at Vic Park and things like that. They were great days.
And the last question I want to ask you, Peter, is what was the best thing about playing footy in the 90s?
Mate, playing with your mates, playing footy was great. I mean, and it was meant to be fun, although playing sometimes wasn't particularly in the games all that fun. But, mate, I wouldn't change a thing. It was just a great lifestyle, and I learned a lot. Scholastically, wasn't that strong at school, but I think the football environment taught me a lot about life and people, and I've met amazing people in the journey.
Peter Caven, been an absolute pleasure to reflect on your footy journey, mate. Thank you for taking the time and chatting with us on the 90s Club Footy Podcast.
No worries, Trent. All the best.
Caven takes the kick in at halfback.
He's been quite outstanding. Across the ground, James. Of course, Caven, a legacy of Robert Shaw. Recruited. And since then has played 66 of a possible 74 games for the Crows. Here's Johnson. Short one, the Caven has run on, keeping Keary honest, storms up to the wing, kicks inside the 50, Jarman out of position, well done in front by Archer.
Number 44, Peter Caven.
That's the end of episode 44. If you've missed any previous episodes, you can catch them all on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts and Spotify. We're on all the social media platforms, so drop us a line on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter on any particular episode you've enjoyed or a guest you would love to hear. Next week, we catch up with former Melbourne captain, David Neates.
It's tough, it's rugged, it's good, solid AFL football.